I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, after British journalist Dom Phillips and Indigenous activist Bruno Perea were assassinated while working to protect the Amazon rainforest, other journalists vowed to finish Phillips' book on how to save the Amazon. That book is now complete. How to Save the Amazon, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers, is a powerful examination of the many threats to the area called Planet Earth's lungs, and it explains why the two were hunted and murdered. Phillips and Perea both made enemies in the region, exposing how Brazil's government at that time was allowing aggressive, illegal deforestation and mining and poaching. In many ways, what is happening to the Amazon is one of the most important stories on the planet. Its continued plunder threatens the global climate, and there were warning signs that the Amazon is nearing its tipping point of collapse. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Amazon rainforest is in a state of deep ecological crisis. There are warning signs that it is nearing a collapse. This is being brought on by illegal deforestation for cattle ranching and illegal mining and other attacks on the forest. Although deforestation has slowed down in parts of Brazil under its new president, scientists warn that the vast forest could hit a tipping point and the region could transform from a lush rainforest into a dry savanna, directly reducing its ability to store carbon and regulate the climate. And this would be a global climate disaster. Why is this happening to the Amazon? It is one of the biggest stories on the planet. It's certainly one of the biggest stories that's being underreported, and it's something that Dom Phillips was trying to change. He was writing a book called How to Save the Amazon when he was murdered for his reporting. That book is completed and is being published by his friends and fellow journalists, and we're joined by two of them. Andrew Fishman is the president and co-founder of The Intercept Brazil. Andrew, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jonathan Watts. He is the global environmental editor for The Guardian. He is also the founder of the Rainforest Journalism Fund. And Jonathan, welcome to The Source.
Very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Andrew, what was Dom Phillips working on? Give me the big picture. What was he trying to do?
Sure. Dom was a freelance journalist in Brazil for over a decade. And he became enamored with this incredible place called the Amazon rainforest. He increasingly just wanted to spend all of his time going these trips, and because he was meeting these incredible people that were, you know, all doing many different things, but many of them were doing some innovative things to try to, you know, save the Amazon in their own small way. And so he decided that, you know, in this time where the Jair Bolsonaro administration was in place in Brazil, and there was a lot of push to destroy the Amazon, get rid of environmental protections, and really just these short-sighted measures, he wanted to dedicate his time to a long-form project where he could really dig in and give a platform, a larger platform to expand the voice of these people that were doing things that he found really interesting, and do it in a human way that would let his audience connect with and feel a little bit of that emotional bond with the Amazon that he had, because, you know, we only take care of the things that we care about. So that was his goal here. He decided to dedicate his career to it. And unfortunately, he died in the process.
Jonathan Watts, when I say this is one of the biggest stories, maybe the biggest story that needs to be covered, did Dom feel that way? And am I just being hyperbolic?
No, Dom really did feel that way, and it wasn't something that came to him immediately. The first time I met Dom was 10 years before he was killed, and at that time, that was 2012, he was a freelancer doing a whole range of different work for soccer magazines, for oil and gas magazines, you know, everything. And he was really not so interested in the environment, but he did a few reporting trips into the Amazon rainforest. And as Andrew was saying, he was just totally captivated by the place and became really intent on finding solutions. And he was a freelancer, so he didn't have much spare cash, but he took the huge risk of taking a whole year off from other work to try and write a book called How to Save the Amazon. And as Andrew said, that was what he was doing. And he was less than half the way through the writing at the time of his murder on the 5th of June, 2022.
I'm going to dig deeper into the case of his murder and also with Bruno Perea, who was the indigenous activist who was with him at that time when they were in the Javari Valley working on that part of the story. But right now, I really want to kind of focus on the Amazon and this talk of how it could be nearing a collapse, which sounds hard to imagine that the Amazon could suddenly just stop being this vast rainforest and what that would mean for the planet and why this is so important for everyone to understand. Sure. So we got a lot to tackle here. And I do want to give out the number for our listeners, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or comment about how to save the Amazon, how important the Amazon is, and how journalists are putting their lives in jeopardy to bring you this important information. So, Andrew Fishman, explain to me how the Amazon works and why that it's a cycle. It recirculates water, recirculates oxygen, does all sorts of things. It's a complex system, and how that could collapse.
You know, we have the global environmental editor for The Guardian here, so I really think that John should take the first swing at this
all right, Jonathan. His
answer.
I should have answered this one after your first question, David. Apologies. So the Amazon rainforest is one of the organs of the planetary life support system. It operates, it's often called the lungs of the world, but it's almost more important than that. It operates more like a heart, pumping water around the region. There are billions and billions of trees in the Amazon, and each one of them transpires a huge amount of water that goes up into the atmosphere. There they form what scientists call flying rivers, and those flying rivers spread across different parts of the U.S. continent, the American continent, mostly in South America, where they irrigate crops. So it's hugely important for rain. It's important for agriculture through irrigation. It's a very important store of carbon dioxide, which of course is when it's released into the atmosphere, that's a big problem for global heating. And it's a home to more biodiversity than anywhere else on land on the earth. So for those three main reasons, it's absolutely essential. And unfortunately, it's been destroyed mostly by farmers for the past 50 years, and that has accelerated in the past 30 years. And Brazil's top climate scientist and Amazon expert, Carlos Nobre, he estimates that once the destruction of the Amazon reaches between 20 and 25% of what existed back in 1970, then it would reach a tipping point and there wouldn't be enough trees left to generate their own rainfall. And so the whole system would start to dry up and change into a different
system. And we're already starting to see the signs of a drought happening. And so that the scale, the size of the Amazon is critical, and chopping away at it could just suddenly bring about its collapse. So we're going to talk more about why this is important for everyone on the planet, why we all should be invested emotionally and also financially in trying to do something about that. And we'll continue talking about how to save the Amazon and Dom Phillips when we come back from this break. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after 1 minute.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
The House has voted to cut federal funding for public media. It costs $1.60 per person each year, and this funding is essential to keeping stations like TPR strong. That support powers local news, cultural coverage, and the emergency alerts that keep you safe. The Senate votes next, and you can contact your senators every day until they do. Ask them to vote no. Go to tpr.org/resiliency to take action today.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the new book, How to Save the Amazon, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers. We're joined by Andrew Fishman, president and co-founder of The Intercept Brazil, and Jonathan Watts. He is the global environment editor for The Guardian, also the founder of the Rainforest Journalism Fund. They completed, with the other contributors and colleagues, the book that Dom Phillips was writing. Dom was murdered while working on this book in the Amazon, along with Bruno Pereira, who was an indigenous activist. There's a lot of story here we got to talk about, but we call in if you got questions and comments about the Amazon, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Andrew Fishman, there are economic drivers to why the Amazon is being deforested. We see illegal logging. We see the explosion of these soy plantations. There's this environmental degradation of the Amazon. So, even Dom writes it in the book himself. If we leave the Amazon to the politicians, there will be no Amazon. So, how do you save the Amazon?
Well, that is the multi-trillion-dollar question that this book tries to address. The title is intentionally ambitious because, you know, this is a enormous area of land. There are multiple countries and multiple governments involved. There's international finance and financing that plays a role. And there's, you know, a lot of land and not a lot of law enforcement. So sometimes you can look at this through a certain lens, and it's quite simple. It's quite obvious. I mean, if you just go by the numbers, you're looking at 80 to 90% of deforestation is coming as a result of principally cattle ranching, and, you know, big agro, soy, and other monocrops are related and tied into that destruction and production cycle. So, you can stop raising cattle, and that would be the main thing that's driving this. But, you know, politically, that's not quite so easy, and it's not clear, like John Wrench referenced Carlos Nobre, and he's a scientist who was part of a massive study by the World Resource Institute that looked at how do we create a sustainable economy in the Amazon. And they projected, and these numbers sound big, but they're actually not in the grand scheme of things, that it costs about half a trillion dollars over 20 years that needs to be invested to create a transition to a sustainable economy. And in that projection that they did, it actually leads to more heads of cattle in the Amazon than there currently are now. Now, that's one position. Some people don't agree with that's the way to go. But they believe that it's possible to do that with better law enforcement, better management and scientific initiatives. But the real question is currently that the reason why the Amazon is in the dire straits it is now, it's because of people, right? So we need to find economic solutions for people locally so that they can have sustainable lives, better options that are not destructive, and still take care of their families and live with dignity, which is something that Dom was very passionate about in his approach to this. And then there's also the politicians that, you know, the Brazilian Congress right now is very much driven by the big agro lobby, the cattle lobby, and all the related forces tied into them. So, you know, they're passing laws currently that would get rid of environmental approvals before major projects. This would be calamitous for the Amazon. And at the same time, you have foreign governments, like the EU is trying to pass legislation that would force companies to get better controls of their supply chains to make sure that they are not, you know, getting through loopholes or doing voluntary measures instead of mandatory measures that are much more rigorous to ensure that, you know, there's not this cattle laundering where, you know, you say that you got it from a approved source, but actually they're buying from somebody else who is doing illegal deforestation.
So I think that there's a massive role for the international company that I've heard about, JBS.
Yeah, they're the biggest meat processor in the world. They're a Brazilian company. They're currently the biggest meat processor in the United States as well. They're a massive, massive player. We're talking about, I believe the number is 14 million animals slaughtered per day globally by JBS. And their supply chain is very much tied into this illegal deforestation. Now, they've made multiple pledges over the years that they were going to clean up their supply chain. But then those tend to be rather soft. Sometimes they'll back out of those. And they don't always include all of the scopes, the full scope of their supply chain. I'm going back from the people that they're buying from. Those pledges are often limited just to the most narrow scope of their own direct work that doesn't look at the whole operation of their companies. So there's a huge role for international corporations, international banks and financiers, pension funds, individual investors, because the thing that we saw during the Bolsonaro years, one of the things that left Dom rather hopeful about the possibility to save the Amazon, because he did believe that it is possible to do this, to save the Amazon, was the impact that foreign companies and investors had on the Bolsonaro government and agro. You know, they were trying to say, we can do whatever we want. This is the Amazon is ours, it's not yours. But when they saw potential of boycotts from major supermarket chains or potential legislation for foreign companies, that was the thing that got them thinking much harder about saving the more sustainable practices.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Tony, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for letting me on. And also, thank you for this fantastic topic. But ultimately, it's about money and power and those huge corporate donations that are going in to keep the power structure in place, the governors that they want, the governance that they want, the political system, the political structure that they want, and who is they? I had a doctor ask me that all the time, right? It's ultimately the oligarchs, the CEOs, it's Wall Street, it's big tech, it's big petroleum. We should talk before the Amazon. We have to talk about the United States and what we're doing to the environment here and the direction it's going in.
All right, Tony, thank you for that. So what Tony is bringing up there, Jonathan Watts, there hope, despair, the problem of big money. These are some of the issues that Dom Phillips was dealing with.
They were, yes. And he was looking at it on the ground, talking to people who were affected, talking to people who were trying to find solutions. And, you know, I see it as well. I live in the Amazon rainforest in a town called Altamira, where there has been a lot of destruction and where we not only have had the worst drought for the past 2 years, but we also have terrible fire seasons. And that's because farmers, cattle ranchers are burning forest to create more pasture land for cattle. And a lot of that cattle does go, as Andrew was saying, and as your caller was saying, through big corporations into international markets. And what needs to be done when we're talking about the hope side of things is use what power we have democratically. I know it's being undermined in many parts of the world, but to use what we have to try to ensure that we have governments that care about these kind of issues. And I agree, yes, the United States no doubt has its own environmental issues that has to be addressed and its own democracy issues. But all of these problems ultimately are global problems and need global cooperation to solve them. They can't be done. None of them can be fixed just by countries focusing on inwardly on themselves.
Well, let's talk about indigenous rights. What role do the indigenous communities play in preserving the Amazon rainforest, Jonathan?
It's essential.
The rainforest is not, it's populated. People live there.
Yeah, there are many millions of people living in the rainforest. The vast majority of them are settlers who've come in from the outside, mostly over the past 50 years. But the original inhabitants, the indigenous peoples who've been there for thousands of years, they have a lot of demarcated land that is protected by the state. And it has been shown by countless studies that there is no more efficient way of preserving the rainforest, of maintaining biodiversity, of storing carbon than creating indigenous lands, because indigenous peoples in the Amazon have the best record of looking after their territory and living in a less destructive relationship with nature. And in fact, history suggests that that over thousands of years, they planted a lot of the Amazon. Many of the trees that are super abundant in the Amazon are food trees like acai, like mango, or medicinal trees. So they play an absolutely important role, and strengthening indigenous rights is a very important part of what Dom was looking at in his book on how to save the Amazon.
And when he died, he was in the Javari Valley, which is part of one of those regions, Andrew Fishman?
Yes, he's in the Javari Valley, which is a massive territory that is home to the greatest density of uncontacted indigenous peoples in the world, not just the Amazon, but in the world. So an extremely sensitive and biodiverse location that's on the border with Peru and Colombia, and is subject to a lot of criminality and a dire lack of rule of law. I mean, the reason that he was there with Bruno is because Bruno was a government agent. He was an indigenous specialist that was there to protect these uncontacted peoples. And when the Bolsonaro government came in, he basically tried to make this whole agency and Bruno irrelevant. They wanted to put him on desk. So he took a leave and sought independent financing to basically recreate what he was doing as a government agent, but with much less power and security, working together with the local communities so they could document the incursions and the crimes and the illegal fishing and logging and mining, et cetera, drug trafficking that was happening there, using GPS, using drones, using digital cameras, so that they would stand up in court. So that was the thing that Dom was looking at, to find ways around when systems fail, when institutions fail, how we can still try to move forward and protect. And I just wanted to go back to what Tony, the caller, said, which I think he makes a very interesting point, and I agree with a lot of what he said. But at the end, he said, we need to focus on the United States first. And I would challenge that part of his assertion, because everything is extremely connected. And there's many, many ways that you could look at this. But, you know, for example, I was saying that JBS, the biggest meat processing company in the world, started in Brazil. Now they're the preeminent player in the U.S. market as well. One of their subsidiaries was the biggest donor to the Trump campaign, $5 million from Pilgrim's Pride. And they also have had multiple cases that they settled over corruption claims and bribery in the U.S. So, you know, things that happen abroad come back home. And on a more direct note, thinking of Texas, you know, being on the border of Mexico, I know immigration is a huge issue. Just imagine for a moment that the Amazon does hit its tipping point, the Amazon being the source of water for this entire continent, forgetting the rest of the global implications that would have, which could be catastrophic. You know, if the entire continent of South America is suddenly having dramatic water shortages because these flooding rivers that John was talking about cease to exist or become much weaker, what do you think is going to happen to those hundreds of millions of people that live in South America? If you don't have water in your community, what are you going to do? I think it could, you know, if we're going in the dark side, if we don't do something to save, it could have catastrophic implications for the entire continent, which would lead to mass migration, which would create, you know, exacerbate all the problems. So we can't look at things like, oh, we need to protect America first, and then we'll worry about everybody else. The United States is a country that's very strong economically and has, you know, is sending money around the world, investing in various companies and practices, and are contributing to the difficult situations that we find ourselves in now, socioeconomically speaking. So in that sense, I think it has an obligation to also consider the impacts of that, and not only how that's affecting other countries and other people, but also how that comes back home.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Is this the wake-up call that we have been waiting for, that it's time to do something to save the Amazon? The book is How to Save the Amazon, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source will continue after this two-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How to Save the Amazon. Earlier, we heard that it was the multi-trillion dollar question, and it sure is. And that's the name of the book, How to Save the Amazon, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers. We're joined by Andrew Fishman. He is the president and co-founder of The Intercept Brazil. Jonathan Watts is the global environment editor for The Guardian, also the founder of the Rainforest Journalism Fund. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. They are part of a collaboration of journalists of and friends of Dom Phillips. Dom was assassinated while he was working on this book, and it was he was hunted and he was killed by a poacher who didn't like the reporting. He didn't like what Bruno Pereira was doing. He was a advocate for the indigenous people. Is this the wake-up call that we've been waiting for to finally get serious and start talking and doing, taking action about protecting the Amazon? Not because it's a cool place with a lot of great biodiversity and it's great to have, but this is something that all of our lives and our climate and our civilization is dependent on. So what are we going to do about that? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Andrew Fishman, you've mentioned Bolsonaro. He's been called the Brazil's Donald Trump, and he was a conservative, and he was part of the dictatorship regime before. He was aggressive in saying we need to exploit the Amazon, and he knew Dom Phillips. They had a famous exchange after Bolsonaro was elected. He had a press conference for the foreign press, and him and Dom, they had an exchange where Bolsonaro was critical of anyone, other countries trying to tell Brazil what to do about the Amazon. What about that?
Yeah, this was something that was very impactful for Dom and really made it much more difficult for him to do his work, actually. So in the very beginning of the Bolsonaro presidency, he did a breakfast with reporters, international reporters specifically. And they had Dom sit next to, it was Bolsonaro, then there was his chief of staff, who's a military man, sort of notorious for some of his spying work that he's done. And then next to them was Dom. And they gave Dom the first question, and which led Dom later to believe that this was a setup, that they were, you know, they had this perfect framing of the three of them in the camera. And they gave him the question. He basically said, what are you... are you concerned about the international impacts or reverberations about the Amazon and the pressure that you're getting? What are you doing to protect the Amazon? And Bolsonaro seemed like he was absolutely ready for this question. He came back and gave him a massive tongue lashing and said, the Amazon is ours. It's Brazilian. It's not for you foreigners coming and telling us what to do. We're the ones that are in control here. More or less said this, and was very vehement and vitriolic in his message. So that clip of that exchange was quickly cut and spread through Bolsonaro's massive communications network, through social media, through WhatsApp, and it just spread all over the country. And they used this network for their messaging, their propaganda purposes, getting around the media, getting around, traditional channels. And that was their big innovation that allowed them to win the election 2018. And so Dom, he became a known face. So, the guy in front of his house at the bar who's not, you know, reading the news every single day, said, "Hey, you're that guy that Bolsonaro told off." And then he's in the middle of the Amazon in communities that, you know, they're not getting a whole lot of news or even sometimes internet or communications in places that you wouldn't expect. And he's getting identified. People say, "Oh, you're that guy. You're that guy that Bolsonaro said, you know, told you off and said to stop meddling in our affairs." Yeah. So it made, when you're doing this sort of sensitive reporting that he was doing, you're taking these trips to places talking about cattle ranching or illegal mining, it's very good for that people don't know who you are. You know, certain people, when you're doing an interview, you tell people who you are. But when you're just traveling through down the river and you're at the hotel, you don't want the hotel owner to recognize you as a journalist and potentially, you know, because of the messaging that Bolsonaro did, just like Trump, a hostile, you know, an enemy of Brazil. So that he felt that put a target on his back, and it really shook him, and it made him much more nervous about the work that he was doing.
And Jonathan Watts, when Dom Phillips and Bruno Pereira, when they went missing, Bolsonaro had a comment about that, which also made headlines. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, after they went missing, for the first few days, the Brazilian government were really slow to respond. It was only when they came under a lot of international pressure that the central government got involved. And initially, Jair Bolsonaro's comment was to say that they were on an adventure, as if it was their fault that they had been doing something reckless, and shifting the blame onto them. And this couldn't have been further from the truth. I mean, Dom Phillips was a very experienced, very cautious journalist who cared about the subject. He knew there were risks involved, but he was willing to take those risks because he believed in what he was doing. And so those comments by Bolsonaro really stirred up a lot of frustration and outrage. And they hurt the family as well, because it was clearly trying to deflect attention away from the authorities and the general situation in Brazil and the Amazon, that was more or less giving a green light to people to break the law, to take more, to invade indigenous areas, to invade protected areas, and those sorts of subjects. So, yeah, that just made Bolsonaro's comments just made a bad situation worse.
And Bolsonaro, he could have ordered resources to aid in the investigation, and he did not. Jonathan?
Not at the beginning. Some of the local police were involved, but a lot of the early searches were done by indigenous groups and by people who'd been working alongside Bruno Pereira in protecting the borders of the Jabari Valley indigenous region, which is the second biggest indigenous territory in Brazil. It's absolutely enormous. So, a lot of us, Andrew and I included, put a lot of effort in those early days into trying to raise awareness around the world of the fact that our friend had gone missing in the Amazon, and that it was clearly a very, very dangerous situation. We didn't know exactly how dangerous until a week or two later. But yeah, it was necessary to kind of call on editors to write the letters to the Brazilian authorities, to get people on to post messages online. And it showed, in a sense, what people power can do online when everybody gets involved and said, "Look, you can't ignore this. Please do something. Send out bigger search teams. Devote more resources to this." So yes, that made a difference in terms of increasing the search. But it was ultimately some of the key breakthroughs were made by the indigenous people, who spent hour after hour scouring the riverbanks for clues. And they found some items of clothing, and that led to the breakthrough. Sadly, but necessarily, finding the bodies. Because if you don't have a body, it's so hard to grieve, and you're just left with a sense of what happened, what went on, where are they, how can I mourn them properly. So yes, very important that people got involved.
There's so many tragic ironies in this story. And one of them was exactly that. One of Dom's main theses for this book was that it is about people power, that, you know, this is a bottom, this change can come from the bottom up and very much should because of the political barriers that have been put in place. And so after they went missing, exactly as John was saying, it became this bottom up movement where people came together to put pressure on the government. And you had the international press picked up, the local press. There was a lot of popular discussion and mass mobilizations of people going out into the streets to protest. And that's exactly what he was hoping would happen more and more in the name of defending the Amazon, right? Instead, this was done on behalf of them, but they became symbols for this broader fight that's occurring. And he, you know, part of the thing that he was doing in the Amazon as well was to shed light on the fact that many of the people that are doing the devastation, the destruction, they're doing it because they're making rational choices for their families. They don't want to necessarily be doing this, not all of them. Many of them wish that they could be doing other things that are more sustainable and healthy for their communities, but there's limited choices. And this is the thing that, you know, maybe doing some illegal fishing or mining or, so the people that killed him and Bruno were very much the sort of people that he was trying to create empathy for, that he was trying to convince people that these people are not your enemies. It is, you know, these systems that have been put in place that create these incentives so that they feel that this is the only way that they can take care of themselves and their families. And so there's just many, many great ironies, one stacked on top of the other.
When we come back from this upcoming break, I do want to get into, you know, what we know about the person who murdered Dom Phillips and Bruno Pereira, how that happened, but also challenge some of the conceptions that, you know, the Amazon has to be exploited in order to provide jobs and fuel and money for Brazil. Is that not absolutely necessary? Are there better ways of doing this? You know, when you consider the cost, if the Amazon does collapse, then is it really worth it? And our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about How to Save the Amazon, the book, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers. Was started by Dom Phillips, but he was murdered while he was writing a book, but it was finished by his friends and colleagues. And you can call in with questions and comments, 833-877-8255. So Jonathan Watts, one person, he confessed, Palado Amarillo, and he was a professional poacher. He basically hunted Dom and Bruno down while they were in their boat going down the river, shot them with a shotgun and hid the bodies and sunk the boat and thought he might be able to get away with this. But is that really the story? Is that really what happened? Was it really just were there bigger issues here?
There were certainly bigger issues here. There'd been tension in that region for a long time because these fishermen, these fishing communities had been around for decades, and they'd got used to going into the Jabari Valley indigenous area before it had become an indigenous area and helping themselves to the fish and the game that they used to feed their families. And when the indigenous territory was declared, suddenly they were not allowed in anymore. And of course that meant they had to look elsewhere, which isn't always easy to find fish. So there'd been this long running resentment. There'd been murders in the past. There'd been shots fired at Bruno Pereira in just months before the killing. And although the chief suspect who's now on trial, whose name is Amarildo de Costa de Oliveira, who was working and who was on the boat at the time with another fisherman called Jefferson de Silva Lima, they are on trial. They are the ones who have confessed to firing the bullets that killed Dom and Bruno. But it was a much bigger conflict, and in fact it was many people in the villages helped to try to hide the bodies in the deep Amazon. And some of the sources, some police sources in that area, when I visited the Javari Valley a year and a half ago, they were telling me that they were horrified that on the night of the killing, there were parties in some of those villages because they were delighted that they had killed Bruno Pereira, who was a man who had often intercepted their captures and helped to train indigenous people to gather evidence against them. So, yeah, this is a lot bigger than just two guys with a grudge.
Let's go to a caller. We have Jim on the line. And Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I've learned that recently LIDAR data has scanned a whole lot of that area and found that thousands of years ago, the area was, the Amazon basin was occupied and that they conducted agriculture and a variety of things. I know we don't know much about those civilizations, but I wonder, was that area rainforest at that time? Do we know? We know the civilizations aren't here, but perhaps land use, did that lead to their collapse? What do we know?
All right, Jim. So that's a jump ball. Andrew or Jonathan, can you answer that?
Can I just jump in on that? Because
sure,
I have a friend who's involved in some of that LIDAR scanning that call it. Was it Jim? Was talking about, and this is really important stuff. And these new ways of researching land use in the Amazon over hundreds or thousands of years has transformed the way archaeologists look at the Amazon and indigenous people who've lived in the Amazon. And what they found is that far from being backward, as many in the West saw them at the beginning of colonization 500 years ago, in fact, they had very advanced societies. They had a lot of trade. There were millions of people living in the Amazon that they used the Amazon as their garden, as their forest, as a kind of playground as well, and that they championed biodiversity, that they lived longer, healthier lives than the average person in London or Paris at that time. So it's kind of changing perceptions of what was there before the European settlers arrived. And what happened to them was essentially that they were decimated by guns and germs that came from the settlers when the settlers pushed into the Amazon and saw it as a resource to be exploited, or originally mainly for gold. Everyone was looking for cities of gold, and that went on for hundreds of years. But today, yeah, there is much more appreciation of how indigenous people use the forest to grow their societies, to make their societies more healthy. So it's a really radical rethinking of what indigenous technology, indigenous knowledge meant at that time.
Yeah, as I understand it, they're finding evidence of a substantial amount of biochar that was laid down by previous civilizations that created the rainforest. It created the cycle that is now threatened. And so there's a lot of questions about, you know, this, about what those civilizations knew and what they were capable of and what we can learn from them. But Andrew Fishman, to the question about, is the destruction, the chipping away, the exploitation of the Amazon actually necessary to sustain Brazil's economy?
I'm going to say my own point of view, which is absolutely not. It absolutely is not. And it's so frustrating how short-sighted so much of the economic decision-making is, because you go on the ground and you speak to these cattle farmers in the Amazon, and many of them understand that what they're doing is creating the seeds of the destruction of their own livelihoods, right? Like, there's many people that are now unable to do the same sort of cattle ranching or monoculture farming that they did just 5 years ago, because of the rapid and massive shifts in rainfall cycles and in dryness and, you know, the seasonality. So there is a pretty strong understanding by people who are paying attention that this is not a sustainable model and that this is a more of a short-term cash grab. But at what cost? There's data that I put in my chapter in the book about international financing that looks at how costly it is. So, you know, there's these private investments, private individuals that are doing cattle ranching or monoculture farming, but the impacts of what they're doing is, according to a World Bank study, 7 times greater than the profits that they're receiving. So for agriculture, mining, logging, there's about $317 billion annually in economic impact from this destruction of the Amazon. And they're doing these very low margin activities, you know, raising cattle. You're looking at something around like $1,000 per hectare per year, which is just this very, very small amount of money that if you were to do agroforestry, which is what the indigenous people have been doing for centuries in the Amazon, you know, the sustainable mixed use crops, you have multiple fruits and vegetables and they're all working in harmony with the environment. That is actually quite often much more lucrative than the destructive cattle ranching and sustainable and rebuilding forest cover and creating homes for wildlife. And you have no idea what we're destroying. I mean, there's so much research and so many, new pharmaceuticals or chemicals or products that mm-hmm. people just don't know about yet. Science doesn't know about yet. And we're destroying all of this to raise some cows. It really doesn't make any sense. And if you think even slightly in a collective sense, and even if you're looking at your own self-interest, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But the hope that I have coming from my chapter about international finance is that when you look at how much profit is being made, you know, for the cattle ranchers, this is their whole business. But for the international banks that are financing this, the international investors, it's just a fraction of a fraction of their profits for the year. If they were to blink their eyes and stop investing in this, they would barely even feel it. So the hope is that through international pressure, there can begin a change, because it is feasible to make this change to a sustainable economy.
We're running out of time here, but Jonathan Watts, what was it like to finish your friend's book?
It was a privilege. This book is a it comes out of defiance, it comes out of solidarity, and it comes out of love. Don was an absolutely wonderful friend who was very generous with his time for many journalists. And, you know, he'd committed his life ultimately to something he believed in, which was protecting the Amazon and nature and indigenous people and all of us as a result. And to have a chance to finish that work was really important, I think, for many of us as well, in the wake of the killing, which shocked so many of his friends. And the number of people involved in this book was astonishing. You know, 8 chapter writers, more than 20 volunteer editors, all of whom are top rank journalists or authors, and then more than 500 people who donated money so that that chapter writers could retrace the steps of Dom.
Did you know right away, Jonathan, that you were going to finish this book and you were going to get it published?
Oh, damn right. Yeah, no doubt. I think that's true for all of us. Not a shred of doubt that book was going to be left unfinished.
I want to thank you both and pass this along to all your colleagues. Thank you for doing that work. Jonathan Watts, Global Environment Editor for The Guardian, Andrew Fishman, President, Co-Founder of The Intercept Brazil. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The book is How to Save the Amazon, A Journalist's Fatal Quest for Answers. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.